Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
Good morning. I'm Carrie Miller. This is NPR News. We've got a busy political week ahead, so we'll get right to the political junkie, Ken Rudin. Hey, Ken, how are you?
I'm still recovering from last night's Oscars, but good morning.
Did you stay up to watch them? I couldn't do it. I was in early.
I love it. I watch it every year, and I just love it. But my goodness, I guess in a year where, or at a time when Hillary Clinton lost and the Chicago Cubs won, last night's Oscars were perfect.
It was kind of bound to happen, right? If you have a question for the political junkie, it's 651-227-6000 or 800-242-2828, or you can just tweet it in at Carrie NPR. So, Ken, I want to talk to you about what was happening over the weekend in Atlanta with the DNC, because, of course, Minnesota Congressman Keith Ellison was in the mix for that. He didn't end up winning the post to lead the DNC. What kind of a DNC leader do you think Peretz is going to be?
Well, it's a good question. I think the reason I think it's a good question is because we really don't understand exactly what the DNC chair does. He or she is never going to be the person who leads the Democrats out of the wilderness. Although, in fairness, if you remember when Howard Dean was chair, when he was elected chair in 2005, in 2006, the Democrats won the House and Senate, and 2008, they won the presidency. So you could thank Howard Dean and his 50-state strategy. Hmm. But Tom Perez really is kind of somebody who needs to get the state parties back and active again. And, of course, in the land of Trump, the Democrats are back on their heels. They've lost dozens and dozens and dozens of state legislative seats, gubernatorial races, Senate and House. So they have a lot of infrastructure stuff to do. But he's not a charismatic figure. I mean, Keith Ellison, for all his controversies of his past, and there are controversies from his past, he was considered much more charismatic, much more of a natural and national leader for the party, more so than Tom Perez.
Democrats are, as I think you've pointed out, not just out of the White House and majorities in Congress. They are down, I think almost 1,000 seats during the
900 plus, yes.
946 right. Or something like that,
right.
During
that
the 8
right.
years of President Obama. I mean, what can a DNC chair, or what can the Democrats do about that? That's long-term kind of planning, isn't it?
It is long-term, and unfortunately for the Democrats, the deadlines are coming up soon, which is mostly the redistricting that takes place every 10 years, and that's, of course, coming in 2020. And, of course, the key there are state legislative seats and gubernatorial races. And, of course, given the fact that so much is at stake in the 2018 elections, they've got to really work very hard to getting candidates. And, of course, in the era of Trump, when you have probably the lowest approval rating of any new president in modern polling history, the Democrats could say, well, you know, we have a great opportunity, but, you know, let's see. I mean, the Democrats would have a great opportunity to retain the White House last year and even perhaps pick up the Senate, and they didn't do that at all. So they have a lot to do, a lot on their plate, and there's no guarantee they can do it.
You know, I want to ask you about those polls, because you know that there is, after what happened during the election with the polls and many of the polls being wrong about predictions about who would win the election. I mean, can you blame people for having skepticism about what these approval rating polls are saying?
Well, that's a fair question. And Donald Trump would always talk about the fake polls unless they show him in a better light, and then he likes the polls. But in fairness, the national polls had Hillary Clinton winning by about 3% or so, and she won by nearly 3 million votes. So I think, I mean, the polls weren't way off. The fact is, we didn't expect Donald Trump, to win Ohio, Pennsylvania.
Right.
Well, Ohio, yes, but not Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and Minnesota,
right.
And Michigan. And therefore, you know, that was a surprise with the polls. But look, you know, something, I mean, the polls do show, unlike Barack Obama, who came into office in 2009 with so much on his plate and got so much done very quickly. I mean, he got the massive stimulus bill was passed in the first month. The children's health insurance law was passed in the first month. Donald Trump also has a Congress of his own liking, of his own party, but many of them still are resisting what his rhetoric and his plans. And so he, in some ways, even though he has large majorities in the House and Senate, he has a tougher road than Obama had in 2009.
You know, last week, I mean, he stayed off Twitter mostly for a couple of days. And then at the end of the week, he was tweeting all that stuff about this FBI situation with Reince Priebus, and Priebus maybe going to the FBI to say, can you stand up there and talk about these Russian sources and make us look good, essentially. And then President Trump's back on Twitter. Where do you think all this is going?
Well, look, Donald Trump knows that if these polls are real and if his approval ratings are low, you could blame not Donald Trump, but blame his salespeople, blame the Kellyanne Conways and the Sean Spicers and, you know, and the those who go before the American people on his stead and try to make his case. And they're not doing a great job of it. So he feels between his tweeting and perhaps his address to Congress tomorrow evening, he could reverse some of that. But he has a long way to go. And of course, you know, it'll be very interesting to see how much he can stay on message tomorrow. Republicans are begging him not to go on on these, you know, these attacks on the fake media and the enemies of the American people, and just focus on winning over those people, you know, keeping the people who voted for him and those who may not have.
Ken, when you say Republicans are begging, I mean, who actually has influence with him from Congress?
Well, that's a great question. I mean, you know, considering the fact that we now see that Donald Trump has been ignoring his own Secretary of State when it comes to foreign edicts
exactly.
and policy. I mean, he'll tweet policy, and then the Secretary of State
Rex Tillerson. Yeah.
Gee, I didn't know that was our policy until I saw this on the tweeting. So, look, this is Donald Trump. We've known this from the beginning, but, you know, as far as the Mitch McConnells and the Paul Ryans of the world, it's hard to make the case that many of them have much influence. But again, if he needs them, if he, the president, needs them to fulfill his agenda, pass his agenda, he may be more willing to sit down with members of Congress.
Ken, on this Russian influence and what was going on with Congress and the Trump administration, do you think we're going to end up with a special prosecutor? I mean, do you think that's where this is headed?
Well, I do think so. I think if you look at what's happening in town halls around the country, the pressure on these Republicans is pretty enormous. Daryl Issa, who's no longer a key Republican figure in Congress, said over the weekend that the only way to do it is to have a special prosecutor. You can't have Jeff Sessions, the attorney general, who was part of the Trump campaign, working on that. But other Republicans are saying, well, you know, it's still premature. Let the Senate Intelligence Agents, let the Senate Intelligence Committee under John McCain, that'll be fun, do this kind of investigation. A lot of them are saying it's premature. But as in previous so-called scandals or at least investigations, what was seen premature in the beginning quickly ballooned into a national clamor for a special investigator.
Keith on Twitter here, Ken, wants to know, could Congress pass a veto-proof law to require President Trump to release his tax returns?
Well, no, because the Republicans won't do that. I mean, it's interesting that when Donald Trump ever is asked about this at the press conference, he'll talk to the media and say, you're the only people who care about that. And we know that's not true. We've seen Republicans post op-eds in newspapers around the country saying we need to know these things. Again, if there are more and more questions, if there are more and more leaks, and that's key, that what's leaks, the leaks that are coming out of the White House, if more and more leaks seem to indicate that there is a there with Donald Trump and Russia and his dealings with Russia, there'll be more pressure on the Republican Congress to push him to release his taxes. Do I think it'll happen? No. Do I think that the excuse that he can't do it because he's being audited is nonsense? I've said that from the beginning.
It makes no sense.
Of course it is.
I mean, he's kind of past the point when this would probably really matter. I mean, he won the election. You know, so,
well, you know,
so,
something, that's exactly what he says. He says, look, I won.
Well,
so you can
whine
and moan.
I meant not matter that it, under full disclosure, I mean matter to, you know, to constituents or voters. I mean, you know, at this point, he's past the danger point, isn't he?
He is. But as I say, if there are serious questions, if there are questions that his dealings may suggest something nefarious, then I think there'll be more and more pressure on Republicans to push the White House to release it. Do I think that'll happen? I do not.
Okay, here is your mystery newsmaker sound of the week. Listen.
I happen to believe, and I think many others do, he's probably the greatest public speaker in those large arenas since William Jennings Bryan. This was galvanized. And remember, we didn't have any money. Hillary Clinton, these guys had over $2 billion. We had a couple of $100 million. It was those rallies and those speeches. All he's doing right now is he's laid out an agenda with those speeches, with the promises he made. And our job every day is just to execute on that, is to simply get a path to how those get executed.
So who is that man and who's he talking about?
It sounds like an address to CPAC at the Conservative Political Action Conference over the weekend, Friday. And I'm thinking, is it Reince Priebus?
No,
it's not. It's
Who's
not
the
Steve
other
Bannon.
Guy that we don't? Yes, it is Steve Bannon.
It is Steve Bannon.
Yeah.
Steve Bannon gave a very interesting speech because he's always, you know, as the Wizard of Oz, he's always behind the curtain and we don't hear
right.
from him. But, you know, something as easy it is to paint him as the, you know, the devil, as so many Democrats and liberals have been doing, he's a smart guy. He's a smart strategist. I think he understands this game of politics far better than Donald Trump does. And I kind of think that he is the brains behind the throne. So when he has his, when he talks to conservatives talking about what we did and what we hope to do, he's somebody you should listen to very carefully.
As you know, President Trump is giving a budget address. It's not really a State of the Union. It's a budget address to Congress tomorrow night.
Exactly, because as your first newly elected presidents can't give a State of the Union, you need to be in office for a year to see how much you've messed up the country. So basically what it is in the first couple, just like Obama in 2009, is an address to Congress, and basically it will talk about his budget priorities. Absolutely.
Okay, so here's the thing that's puzzling to me. Trump keeps talking about the budget mess that he inherited.
Yeah, right.
I mean, Republicans, I guess, have been making that mess because they've been in charge for some amount of time. Does he realize what he's saying?
Well, you know, something, I wouldn't say that Republicans have been in charge, even though
well,
you did have Barack Obama in office for 8 years.
But...
So, of course, but here's the thing. Here's the mess that Donald Trump has inherited. It's low unemployment, certainly much. Think of what Barack Obama, when he came into office in 2009, the collapse of the financial system, the economic system. Wall Street was on the decline. Unemployment was up and rising. So you have basically no foreign crises that they're calling for more and more intervention. You have low unemployment, and of course you have House and Senate controlled by your own party. That's not a bad mess to be inherited.
I said that they've been in charge because the House has run the Republicans have run the Appropriations Committee in the House for how long, Ken? They had
right,
the Appropriations,
right?
Okay, they had the Appropriations Committees in the Senate for the last couple of years. I mean, yes, Barack Obama was a check on that. But they've had a lot to do with the way money got appropriated.
That's true. But of course, Barack Obama, with his executive orders and the fact that, look, if you think about the Affordable Care Act, I think Congress, last time I checked, had 953,000 votes to repeal it. And of course, Obama would veto it. So look, it was a check. It was basically, it was more of a gridlock than any party in control. There doesn't seem to be gridlock now. They're both on the same page. Obama had a Democratic Congress for 2 years. And then, of course, you know, that ended with the 2010 elections. Trump has that, and let's see what he does with it, because it's one thing to have these executive orders. It's another to push legislation through Congress, and that's exactly what Donald Trump needs to do, to not only to make his agenda become a reality. He's got to work with Congress and make some kind of these laws being passed.
Ken, always a pleasure, and I'll catch you right back here at the same bat station on Monday, all right?
And I'm so excited that La La Land won the Best Picture. See ya. See you next.
Ken Rudin talking about what happened at the Oscars. Chris Farrell's in the studio with me. Did you watch the Oscars last night?
No, I managed to miss at least that part. I watched the beginning because I always like the commentary, opening commentary.
I do too.
And then I'm kind of drifting away.
Yeah, same here. Apparently, we drifted away at the wrong time because there was actual news. We bring you all the news that you need to know, including what happened at that crazy Oscar ceremony last night with naming the wrong Best Picture. And then it was really funny to watch the photographs in the audience as this was as they realized that something weird was going on.
Because the people with the headsets and they weren't
leaving. Meryl Streep looking at people like, what is going on here? Chris Farrell here to help us on a day when we want to remind you that news and information, there's a lot of places to get a lot of news and information out there. You want to invest your time and your interest and hopefully a little bit of your money into a news and information source that you trust. Minnesota Public Radio, 800-227-2811, nprnews.org/donate.
You know, one of the things that I love about NPR News is you go from talking with Ken Rudin, the political junkie, and you're getting into a lot of the nitty gritty about the political scene.
It's kind of inside baseball stuff.
Very inside baseball. And then at the same time, you know, looking at what happened with La La Land and Moonlight.
I mean, we
really cover the waterfront in terms of the news. So if you want to help contribute to making that news possible, to make that analysis possible, and to keep us independent and strong, that this is an independent voice, and it's part of your voice, because one of the things, Carrie, I think that you agree is so much of what we do is part of a community. I mean, the comments that you get, the people who call
in,
they add that insight. And every once in a while, you just get that moment where you go, well, I would never have thought of that.
Yeah.
That really adds something to the story.
Absolutely.
So if you call 1-800-227-2811, you can join and become a member, or you can go online at nprnews.org/donate.
Hey, for everyone who contributes today, I haven't mentioned this in a while, the 50th anniversary poster can be yours. Kathy Werzer and I were talking about it this morning. It's beautiful, cool design. It's our way of saying thank you for doing this on this day of the membership drive. And Chris, I will let you know, we don't know whether we made the challenge. We came ever so close. It was $5,000 from Bonfi, the morning challenge,
right?
But we don't yet know.
Okay.
They're still counting.
Well, it's
still tallying in case anybody out there wants to know. Maybe I'm the only one who cares about that.
No, but we want to be accurate.
That's right.
Exactly.
Absolutely. So if you were getting in, you missed the challenge, you called it 9:05, all good. You are supporting a news and information source that is independent, enlightening, full of integrity. That matters. That's the thing that really matters day in, day out. nprnews.org/donate, 800-227-2811.
Okay, I just have to add, in terms of the 2017 calendar you mentioned, I mean, the artwork
poster
is by Minnesota native Jordan Taylor.
I know, it's really beautiful.
Which is really cool.
I know.
Do you want to know what's going on in your own backyard? I always do. I always want to know what's going on, but also what's happening on the other side of the world. And one of the things, I was mentioning this the other day, Carrie, was I was in the car and I'm driving along, and there's this plan to hire a lot of border agents. What is it, 5,000? And they were interviewing a former head of the region down the Southwest.
I heard that interview. That was outstanding.
And I had never thought about how hard it is to actually hire qualified people who can be in the middle of nowhere and exercise judgment and be smart. And so you think, you know, hey, you just pick up the phone. You say, hey, 5,000 people, come on, apply. We'll take a couple of them. And how difficult it was. And that really changed my perspective on how I think about this issue, at least this, you know, this segment of it.
Right.
So if you call 1-800-227-2811 or join online, nprnews.org/donate, that's the kind of reporting. That's the kind of analysis. That is, you know, the producers and the reporters went out and found this person who had this information to impart it. And it was imparted in a way, was nonpartisan, but it was illuminating.
And if you've ever had your mind changed, your mind opened, the way Chris Farrell is describing, we'd like to hear from you. nprnews.org/donate, 800-227-2811. We made the goal, and that is good news.
Yay!